Our second case this morning is United States against Brown. Counsel for the defense.
Chief Judge, honorable members of the court, my name is Catherine Lancewood, and along with Shannon Bennett, we represent the appellant in this case. The evidence in this case is not legally sufficient to sustain appellant's conviction for possession of child pornography under Article 134, Clause 2, because the government failed to elicit evidence that the possession was service discrediting. In this case, they had to prove two elements. The appellant possessed visual depictions of minors engaged in sexually explicit conduct, and second, that this possession was service discrediting. Appellant concedes that the prosecution established...
How do you, from the get-go, you say it was service discrediting. Is it a tendency to be service discrediting, or was service discrediting? Well, I could say that again in English, but I think you get the question.
Your Honor, this court in Medina said the service discrediting is an implicit evidence. It's our position that there needs to be...
You have to prove actual service discredit versus that something has a tendency to discredit the service.
Yes, Your Honor, based on the facts and circumstances of that particular case. So the question before us then is, to what extent is the government required to put on evidence of service discrediting? And this honorable court has required that for Clause 1 and 2 prosecutions involving guilty pleas to be proffered, that there is a dialogue between the military judge and the accused about why the evidence of service is crediting. We would ask the court in this case as well to take that same approach when reviewing these. If we look at the line of cases, Sapp, Mason, and Irvin, in all those cases, they admitted it was service discrediting. If you compare that as well with Sendejas, Martinelli, and O'Connor, in those cases, the accused and the military judge did not have a dialogue on service discrediting, and this court did not uphold those guilty pleas.
But none of those cases, as I recall, deal with this question of whether the word tendency to bring discredit versus actual discredit was at issue. What's your position on that?
Yes, Your Honor, and certainly, you know, pre-Ashcroft and looking at constitutional versus unconstitutional language, but our position is that there needs to be the tipping point on each of those cases was whether there was the evidence of that. And certainly the possession...
Which case stands for the proposition that actual discredit, proof of actual discredit is required as opposed to proof of a tendency to discredit?
None of those cases we cited, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Is your argument hinged then entirely on that?
Yes, Your Honor. Our position is that there needs to be a dialogue. So, for example, the investigator was on the
two separate issues. One, are you saying that the evidence that actual is required versus a tendency? You're saying tendency is fine, but there wasn't proof of it? Or are you saying, no, you have to do actual, and there wasn't proof of it? You see the distinction?
Yes, Your Honor. Yeah. Our position is there needs to be actual evidence of service discrediting.
Well, but is it when you actual evidence that there's a tendency to be service discrediting, or actual evidence that it's actually service discrediting?
Actual evidence that it actually is service discrediting. For example, in this case, I'm sorry, ma'am, did I misunderstand?
No.
Your Honor.
No.
In this case, for example, there was the investigator for the Nebraska State Patrol who took the stand. He was on the stand, and the question simply could have been asked of him. It wasn't this case. Even the prosecution, in their closing argument, admitted that it was an element of the offense. They said, well,
in a contested trial, that's not something the fact finder can reasonably infer from the circumstantial evidence?
Certainly, a fact finder can infer elements. I think you have to look at the facts and circumstances of a particular case. In this particular case...
In your view, do the parties agree that this person had a video of a six-year-old child being raped?
Yes, Your Honor.
And a fact finder could not reasonably infer from that that it was had a tendency to be service discrediting?
Your Honor, certainly Yes, Your Honor, you could infer that. With child pornography, we're not saying that the possession per se is services crediting. This court in SAP says we have no doubt that knowing possession of child pornography, when determined to be services crediting, is a violation of Article 134. Now, the particular facts of this case, appellant admitted that he entered search terms, teen girl, young girl, words to those effects. He got back upwards of 1,000 returns, files coming down. He highlighted the top 20, downloaded those. The record reflects it could take a few hours to...
Where are you going with the argument, though? My question was, the record reflects that before the trier of fact, you correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is both parties agree that the trier of fact had before him that one of the videos included the rape of a 6-year-old child.
Yes, Your Honor.
What is your argument as to why there is not legally sufficient evidence of service discredit in this case in light of that fact?
It's appellant's position that how the appellant came into possession of that he did not intend to possess those. And in fact, the record shows that when he came into possession of some of these files, once he learned, when he went back, whether it was hours or days later, he learned there was child pornography, that he deleted those files.
Isn't that a matter for the trier of fact to resolve whether he intended to have them or not?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
And was that not resolved in a manner disfavorable to your appellant?
That is correct, Your Honor. The closest that this court has come to saying whether something is per se discrediting is in U.S. v. Falk, the dissent, where they said the possession of 126 computer images of child pornography lasciviously organized into 4 directories on a personal computer is per se services crediting.
For legal sufficiency, for us to determine that this evidence was legally sufficient, is it necessary for us to determine that child pornography is per se discrediting, or just that in this case it was discrediting and it's legally sufficient?
In this case, Your Honor, it is legally sufficient. That would be the question.
Aren't you arguing that the fact that whatever this stuff was, it was known only to the appellant and to the officials investigating the affair deprives it of the public nature necessary to services crediting conduct?
Yes, Your Honor. The record reflects that the only people who knew about this was the investigators and the appellant.
So that means that child pornography is not discrediting, because obviously anybody who looks at child pornography doesn't do that on a park bench. Right? So how could this court ever determine child pornography was discrediting? The whole idea is you're doing it in private, presumably. I mean, it's not a good thing to do in a company formation.
Yes, Your Honor.
So your position basically is child pornography is not discrediting.
That is our position.
Unless it's done in a formation or some notoriously open and public place, or it's inadvertently discovered by somebody.
That is a factor to consider, obviously, whether, for example, in Kazaa, the file network sharing program that appellant was using, if he, for example, used, identified himself as an Air Force member, that's one factor to consider.
I'm sorry, finish your question, and I have a question. Finish the question,
yes, sir.
I have a question.
In this particular case, we don't have those circumstances. We would concede that typically people viewing child pornography do it in the privacy of their own home. And the reason why it's not serviced as crediting in this area is because the appellant was not searching for child pornography. He cast a wide
net. Okay, so your argument is a different one. Your argument
is an innocent ingestion argument.
Yeah, your argument is not that there's some zone of privacy you have to get beyond to be service discrediting. Your argument is that he wasn't looking for this stuff and he came on it inadvertently.
Yes, Your Honor.
So, I mean, you're basically arguing that he wasn't guilty. I mean, that's the argument that I'm hearing today, which leads to the question I have for you, which is in your supplement to the petition for a grant of review at page 18, you said, where the constitutional right to privately possess images such as the one in question here is at stake, the government must do more. which led to the granted certified specified issue, which had to do with images of virtual minors. Upon review of the record, as it turns out, all of this is the granted issue in the case being here is based upon a faulty premise, which is that it was all photos of virtual minors, and it appears to me that the record, in fact, shows that they were not virtual minors. And so my question to you is, should we be deciding these issues in this case? Or should we dismiss the case as improvidently granted? Because what you're arguing here today is that the reason it wasn't service discrediting is because he's actually innocent.
Your Honor, that's true.
I assume that that's because you can't make arguments with respect to the questions that we granted because it's not supported by the record.
Yes, Your Honor. When I inherited the brief, I went back and reviewed the record and realized that there were actual minors in this case. That being said, though, the issue of the legal sufficiency...
You concede that these are actual images?
Yes, Your Honor.
So, with respect to the granted issue, subsection 1, the premise that the sexually explicit content at issue involved virtual minors, that doesn't apply, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And the second premise that it was granted upon, the images of virtual minors were reviewed on appellant's privately owned computer, again, the virtual minors, that doesn't apply.
Correct, Your Honor.
So I ask you again, since the argument that you're making here today appears to me at least to be one of, it wasn't surface discrediting because he's actually innocent because he didn't mean to get the child pornography, that this is not the case for us to be deciding these questions.
It's appellant's position that with the element of service discrediting that there was not evidence elicited from the witnesses on the stand in this case. And with a guilty plea, Your Honor.
All right, that's not my question. My question is this the case to decide the issue that we actually granted, the question that we granted, which was based on a factual inaccuracy in the supplement to the petition for a grant of review?
Your Honor's position that there's still the question of to what extent does the government need to put on, whether it's virtual or actual, children of service discredited.
Well, aren't you arguing factual sufficiency? And we're not the place to argue factual sufficiency.
No, legal sufficiency, Your Honor, in that was there...
You're arguing the quantum of evidence, which seems to resonate in factual sufficiency.
It's our position that... when you're looking at this, we should treat it the same as we would a guilty plea and the legal sufficiency of a guilty plea.
This wasn't a guilty plea.
Yes,
it's a litigated case.
Yes, Your Honor. And that's what we're asking the court to review this in a similar light in the services credited and how the court has come down whether there needs to be evidence elicited from the appellant to the military judge. Now, obviously, as Your Honor is aware, this was a litigated case. In this case, that's simply the question from, even the military judge could have asked the investigator on the stand questions of that nature. It just isn't a guilty plea. They would have asked those questions of the appellant when he is in the care inquiry with the military judge.
Okay.
Well, we recognize that you're not here on the issue of your own drafting, that you're here on the issue that this court specified. But it appears, both from the record and from your concession here today, that we're not dealing with virtual images. And many of the cases that you have cited here, they've been decided on the fact that because they are virtual images, they get greater scrutiny, they're entitled to greater protections because it's constitutionally protected conduct. How important is it, or can you even make the argument in this case, given the wording of the specified issue and given the fact that we said virtual images, that's what we're here for, and now the fact that it appears that we're talking about actual images, where does that leave you? I mean, how much do you have to argue at this point?
It's still our position that there needs to be evidence of services credit elicited for it to be legally sufficient.
Okay, let me just deal with that for a minute. If there has to be evidence of service discrediting, I believe in response to an earlier question to Judge Ryan, you said that it has to be actually discrediting. And if that's the case, then what do we do with the phrase in the manual that says that it need be have a tendency to be discrediting? Do we ignore that?
No, Your Honor, I think when we look at the tendency, we look at the facts and circumstances, how the appellant possessed these. Did he organize them? Did he label them? Did he encrypt them?
Okay.
In this case, we don't have any of those facts in front of us in that regard. They just went to his default folder.
All right, counsel, I would like you, while you're waiting for your chance for rebuttal, to look at the specified issue, okay, and consider what you're arguing here today, and with the understanding that what we review here are issues that we've actually granted and not new arguments that counsel would like us to decide. And I would like you to come back on rebuttal and answer my question, which is this case the one to answer the specified issue, or was it improvidently granted based on a factual inaccuracy in the supplement to the petition for grant of review?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that isn't criticism of you or anyone else. It's just a question that I would like an answer to.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Good morning. My name is Major Donnelly Hill, and I, along with Colonel Gerald R. Bruce, represent the United States in this matter. As your honors have noted with the appellant's argument, the way the government read the facts in this case and the evidence in this record, we focused primarily on the third subpart of the issue that was granted, and that was the legal sufficiency of the conviction in light of the service discrediting element. And that is what the majority of my argument will discuss, because as appellant conceded, the images in this case were proven to be actual images, and therefore the virtual image argument is irrelevant. This court reviews questions of legal sufficiency de novo, and the test for legal sufficiency is considering the evidence in the light most favorable to the prosecution. A reasonable fact finder could have found all the essential elements. There are only two elements in this offense, and specifically the second element is that the act, under the circumstances, was to the prejudice of good order and discipline in the armed forces, or was of a nature to bring discredit upon the armed forces. And as your honors had noted, the manual describes discredit as to injure the reputation of, and conduct is punishable when it has the tendency to bring the service into disrepute or which tends to lower it in public esteem. Article 134 does not require direct evidence that the service has in fact been discredited in some manner. The appellant argues essentially a legal sufficiency argument before this court, and the government argues that that is inappropriate for this forum to argue factual sufficiency, and in fact focuses their argument, their remaining argument, on legal sufficiency. In this case, the appellant also made the argument in his brief that it is not legally sufficient to discredit the armed forces based on the fact that only the investigators knew of the behavior. And the case law doesn't tend to support that. And insofar as this court's most recent decision on this issue in U.S. v. Medina, the court stated that it is intuitive that the viewing of child pornography discredits those who do it, as well as the institutions with which those persons are identified.
Is it the government's position that there need not be any public disclosure whatsoever to be a 134 offense to have the tendency to bring discredit?
It's the government's position that under Clause 2 of Article 134, if there is no public disclosure, but yet military disclosure, that would meet the good order and discipline aspect. If there is public disclosure, which the government would argue was, in fact, in this case, it can meet the service discrediting.
What do you define public disclosure?
And I'm going to further clarify my answer when I answer your question, sir. But the public disclosure would be a person outside of the military in my argument today.
So it's your view that if it's not discrediting to view child pornography, get caught with the pornography and be court-martialed unless the public reads a newspaper article about it?
No, Your Honor. Actually, that's the part I wanted to add on to my answer, and that is that it doesn't, in fact, have to be disclosed to the public in order for it to be service discrediting. This court has found that it can be intuitive that it is service discrediting, as well as the fact that a military judge...
Does getting caught make it service discrediting?
Well,
isn't that a bit circular?
Well, in some respects, because the government's argument really is that when you're dealing with the images and the videos in this that you have in this particular case, the downloading of those images and possession of those images are in some sense per se service discrediting.
Okay, so you're arguing that it's a per se thing.
When you're dealing with the images and the videos in which we have in this case.
Okay, counsel.
On a case-by-case basis.
Yes.
You're not saying that all images are inherently service discrediting.
No,
you're saying that these images on these facts.
Yes, Your Honor.
Are inherently service discrediting.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's all the government needs.
What child pornography is not discrediting?
Well, certainly the government wouldn't say that there is child pornography that isn't discrediting. However, and under the guise of your hypothetical, I would say that if you had a case where potentially you had images of a 15-year-old and the defense was possibly that they thought that those images were an adult or things of that nature, maybe they're not videos of children getting raped, but still images of child pornography as definition under the statute, but yet
That's arguing to the theory upon which they were obtained, not to whether the image itself is discrediting.
Correct. In this case, based on the images that you have, the government's argument is that it's per se service discrediting.
Now, you keep on talking about based on the images that we have, is part of that analysis the fact that the images were in fact actual child pornography?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, which leads to the same question that I will ask you that I had asked appellant's counsel, which is, we granted a specified issue, and if you disagree that the questions or the premises upon which the specified issue rests are not reflective of the facts in this case?
If I understand your question correctly, ma'am, I would agree, and that is why the government, in our response brief to this court, focused solely on the legal sufficiency aspect based on the fact that our reading of the record was that these were not virtual images and that these were, in fact, actual images. And so, based on the granting of this court of the specified issue, the government focused mainly on the third prong, as the virtual image issues don't apply in this case. Further, you don't just have a per se assumption that this is service discrediting. You actually have evidence on the record that this could be service discrediting. And the government would argue that the appellant's testimony in and of itself provides some evidence, circumstantial evidence, that this is service discrediting. The appellant testified that when he first noticed the first image of child pornography, he himself was disgusted at the image and subsequently deleted it. He went on to testify that as more and more images popped up, it became too time-consuming for him to delete them, but he knew that it was wrong, and he just simply didn't have the time to delete them and kept them on his computer. So a military judge, as a fact finder, is presumed to know the law and to apply it properly. He knew the elements required for this offense. He knew the evidence presented. As the appellant's testimony, as well as the fact that you have not only the local civilian investigator, but you also have the U.S. Customs and Immigration agent, as well as the European child pornography sting, that all knew about his possession, and most of which knew about his military status as well. So even though this court hasn't adopted the standard under U.S. v. Green, even under U.S. v. Green, you have the connection of the public being aware of the behavior and the military status of the member.
The police or the public?
Yes, Your Honor. The government's position is that the police are civilians and they are not in the military, and therefore they would be considered outside of the military. Their view of the military could be lowered based on the fact
that... So the mere fact of an investigation renders it service discrediting, per se?
No, Your Honor. The mere downloading and possession of the child pornography that we have in this case...
The mere failure to dump the stuff because it got to be too much of a job renders it service discrediting.
Well, that in conjunction with the fact that he continued to cast the same net, he continued to use the same search terms, he continued to use mm-hmm. Bazaar after he saw the first image.
Okay.
So he continued this behavior. He kept
the continuation of the behavior and the spreading of the net. And
It's the total facts and circumstances of the case, really. But the government's argument
on these facts.
On these facts.
Okay, counsel, you are doing the exact same thing that appellant's counsel did, which is appellant's counsel basically said it's not service discrediting because he didn't mean to do it. You're saying it is service discrediting because he did mean to do it. And I will ask you the same question that I asked appellant. Looking at the specified issue, the issue that this court specified, can we answer this issue or in this case, or should we dismiss it as improvidently granted? I mean, the case that we have is not the case that was presented to us in the supplement for the grant of review.
I understand, Your Honor. However,
and I understand that you would like to argue, he would like to argue that we should reverse the court below, and you would like to argue that we should affirm the court below. But we asked a specific question, and that's the question that we were interested in looking at, right?
Yes, ma'am. However, the problem with the government answering your question that you granted is that the government's argument is for subsections 1 and 2, they weren't virtual images, therefore those don't apply. For subsection 3, the question was it legally sufficient because investigators only knew of the service discrediting for the service discrediting prong, and that's what the government's focusing their argument on. Because
I'm not suggesting that you're doing anything wrong. We asked you the question. We specified an issue when you're trying to answer the parts of it that you can. My question is a little bit different, right? Which is, can this court answer the issue that was actually granted in the case? The issue, not part of the issue. The issue granted in the case based on the facts of this case.
No, Your Honor. Thank you. The position is no, that you cannot because the images are not, in fact, virtual. So based on that, the government's argument certainly is that the military judge was the fact finder in this case, heard and saw all of the images in this case, as well as the evidence, including the appellant's testimony. He is allowed to use his knowledge and ways of the world. This court in U.S. v. Brisbane found that circumstantial evidence is enough to show service discrediting nature of the offense. And the military judge found this behavior to be service discrediting. Accordingly, the government's position is that there is ample evidence in the record for this court to find a conviction under Article 134, Clause 2 is legally sufficient, and ask this court to affirm the findings and sentence. If there are no further questions, one final note. This is my final argument. You all, I will be moving on to a new assignment, so I'd just like to say it's an honor and privilege. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Judge Ryan, if I could start, I misspoke. First, there needs to be actual evidence that has a tendency to bring some discrediting, and I think I said there needs to be actual evidence of actual tendency. Misspoke. And, Your Honor, to answer your specific question, if we look at the issue as a whole, no, I don't believe that we can answer that question.
Thank you.
As a whole. At the same time, looking at issue 3, we think the same analysis still could apply. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is now submitted. We thank counsel for both parties for your presentation today. Thank government counsel for her presentation over the period of her service here. The case is now submitted, and the court will stand in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
All rise. The court will stand in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow.